Hello, everyone. This is Bill Knauer, and you're listening to Author, where we talk about writing and life, because what it takes to write the book you most want to write is also what it takes to lead the life you most want to lead. Author to Author is brought to you by Author Magazine, the premier free writing magazine on the internet, featuring articles on writing and the writing life, as well as video and audio interviews with best-selling and award-winning authors across the genres. You can find Author Magazine at authormagazine.org. And we are funded by the Pacific Northwest Writers Association, supporting writers from pen to publication since 1955. To learn more about the PNWA and their Writers Conference, which will be this summer, but they're just now starting to take people who are signing up for it. I think that's just now. And if you sign up early, I believe you get to an extra appointment with agents, and that's always a good thing. So, yes, you can learn more about them and their conference at pnwa.org. You know, I teach memoir now, and one of the things I tell my students is that in a way they can't worry about telling a familiar story, because in certain ways all memoir, I think, is sort of the same story. The writer usually perceives of themselves as having some weakness, and in the course of the story they usually have that perception corrected, or what is seemed to be a weakness is seen as a strength. And often this comes about through some sort of event, an experience that would normally be described as undesirable. But in the course of the event, the writer discovers sort of who they are and what they can and cannot do. And I thought of that when I was getting ready to do this interview with today's guest, the wonderful Corbin Lewers, whose second book, her first book, was Creating Life, the memoir of a writer and mom in the making. Boy, books and children, they are so linked, I'll tell you that. That was her first book. But her second book is Losing Him, Gaining You, Divorce as an Opportunity. As an opportunity. Now, I know nobody going through a divorce sees it as an opportunity, but think about it. Without divorce, without these things like divorce and disease and even death and accidents and all this supposed misfortune, we would have no stories to tell, hardly have a life to lead. There'd be no books written, I'd have no show, and I wouldn't have Corbin on this show with me now. But I do, fortunately. Corbin, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much.
Well, yes, divorce as an opportunity. You have to be careful who you say that to. You could get punched in the nose. I think about it. But the fact is, you have a choice, don't you? How do you want to see it? When did you decide to write this book?
As I was getting divorced, I started to write, of course, another memoir about it, because that's mostly what I write, and essays and memoir are what I teach and what I write. But over and over again, there was no conflict. So as you're saying, divorce in itself, or most memoirs, are about an event that is not particularly desirable. But we were able to do it in such an amicable way, and my kids seemed to be fine. So I sent it to my agent, and she said, "Where's the conflict? This is boring."
Yeah.
So, and I said, "Well, I'm trying to show people that it doesn't have to be a bloodbath. It can be done differently." Yeah, I'm not interested. You know, so I started to change it and thought, okay, maybe it needs to be more of an advice book, which people have been telling me for 10 years to write advice columns, write advice books. And I said, no, that I don't want to do that. That's not for me. But as it started to come together, I realized what I did would hold more merit the way I did it if I could back it up with PhDs and experts in relationships and all things, because who am I besides a writer who happened to get divorced? So my expertise status wasn't very large. So when it started to weave together in that way, it felt also, it took off the, because as you write memoirs, so you know, there's always a point when you're writing a memoir, and all the clients I work with who say, this is so self-indulgent, and I started to feel that way as well. Am I just looking at my navel again and explaining it to the world at large, and do they care? And we all wonder, does anyone care? So by taking it as, okay,
yes,
it's part my story, but it's part of a lot of other people's story, and it's part reference, I could let go of the, this is completely self-indulgent fear. So that's how that came
about.
Well,
you know, it's interesting because... But you were writing it, and I think this is so often how it is. So you were going through the experience, and you knew that the experience was valuable.
Yes.
I mean, you're a writer, so you probably write about every damn thing that happens to you. But here you are having this big life event, right? And so you know it's valuable. You can feel that within you. And so you handed it to your agent, but that wasn't the form. But that didn't mean that there wasn't something to be communicated here. You just needed to find the form for this thing that you felt within you that you knew there's something of use here. I just don't want to see this as a big, messy, you know, whatever.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's the beauty of drafts, because this is what we get so worried about. We think our first draft has to be great, and it's usually not. But you keep going, and even if you toss the whole entire thing, you didn't really toss the whole entire thing, because a lot of what you wrote is still in your brain. So I started over. I didn't try to cut and paste, because for me that just takes way more time. I did literally start a whole new document and started writing it from scratch. But the year plus that I worked on the memoir, maybe 2 years that I worked on the memoir, was still being utilized in this book as well. So it wasn't for nothing. And no writing is for nothing. Even if we don't do anything with it, we grew from it, we learned from it, and we do sometimes use it in our next work. And although it's hard to, you know, let 500 pages of something you worked on just sit on your desktop and not submit it, it's part of the game. So
boy, I'll tell you. But, you know, I just finished a memoir, and it took me 12 drafts to write the thing. And I was absolutely determined. I knew I would get it, but I had to find the form. But every single draft taught me something about that story that I could understand. And so I wished I could have done it in 3 drafts. But the fact is, each one of those brought me a little closer. Even though some of those drafts were way off target, they still brought me closer in some places.
Well, and the thing with memoir that's so difficult is that there's no end point until we die. Well, then we can't write the book. So we are always learning and we are always growing. And at some point, I just have to say, I'd write both books completely different now if I was going to write them now. But I have to remember, in my brain, the divorce book was about women newly going through divorce. Well, that was 5 years ago for me. So I have different perspective on things now. But 5 years later, most people aren't reading a divorce book. They're reading it when they're in it. So I have to just say, no, leave this, because that's how you felt then. And if you keep trying to change it and add every new experience and every new learning, that you'll never finish the book, because hopefully we're always learning and growing. And so you just have to say, okay, this. And same with creating a life. It was, by the time that book came out, I was mortified. I was like, oh, I would completely write this differently. Well, I had to get over that and just say, but this is the book you wrote then, and this is your first book. So. Yeah. This is the story you needed to tell then. If you were going to tell it now, you would tell it differently, but that's okay. Just let it be what it is then, because, as you know, we could work on these things our whole life, and that's fine too. Some people do, but for me, I actually want to publish a book. I don't want to just work on it for 30 years, so I have to just tell myself enough.
Well, not only that, but like, creating a life will be of use to people. People will gain from it. People will be glad for it, and even though you wouldn't write that book again, there's going to be a lot of people out there who are glad that you did, who wrote that book. You know, not that the book that you would write.
Exactly. Now. Absolutely. And then the next book can be, you know, because along with being a writer, I work with other writers as a developmental editor and a coach. And so this always happens towards the end. And all of a sudden they're adding this whole other book. I say, no, that's your next book. So remember, this book is about A to B. And let's stop right there. And I know you've learned more, and I know now you know, but that's okay. That can be the next one. You don't have to write just one memoir. You can write many memoirs or novels or whatever it is that they're working on. But you can't write it all in one. You have to let it go and stop at this point. At some point, our children need to go to school.
We let it be one thing, more or less. Let it be one coherent idea, and that'll be very gratifying for everybody.
Yes.
Involved.
Yes. Absolutely. Absolutely.
So you call it. So it's losing him, gaining you, and
yes.
And so this is the theme of it, is finding yourself after that split. Who are you?
Who are you?
Who are you without that? Who are you? Because it's so easy to become lost, even in a very good marriage, to become one that's really where you're not going to split up, to become lost in your own identity. Is that something that you went through?
Oh, absolutely. And although the book's obviously targeted for divorced women, I say in the beginning that every person I know I'm 44, of around my age, is going through this right now, even if they're not getting divorced, because you're looking at your career and you're saying, okay, I've been doing this for about 20 years. Do I want to keep doing this for my next 20 years? You're looking at your relationships. You probably had children. So there's so many things that just spiraled. And this is our time, I think, of reflection of, okay, and I don't call it a midlife crisis. I just call it a midlife evaluation. What how were the last 20 years for me? What do I want to repeat? What do I not want to repeat? And so sometimes that ends up in divorce, and hopefully it doesn't. But yeah. I don't know a single woman who hasn't lost something in either their marriage or by being a mother, or, you know, this whole thing that we can have it all is maybe not true. And we can, but at a cost. So, okay, we want to have the career and we want to have the children and we want to have the marriage. Well, where's time for us? And this applies to men too. Yeah. A lot of my men friends, it's the same thing. They don't have time for themselves. So their hobbies, their interests, their creative pursuits, all those things we forget about. And we say, wait a minute, when did I stop doing all these things? And which one of these things can I bring back into my life? And the losing him part is also no one wants to hear you complain about your ex-husband. Like, we don't want to hear it. Move on. You know, just, you have to move on. I don't care if he was the biggest jerk. Like, you have to move on because, you know what? He moved on. Like, he's fine. And by you still being so angry at him, that is not hurting him. That's hurting you. And that's hurting your friends because they're sick of hearing about it. And that's hurting your children because they don't need to hear this. And so it's just you. That part's gone, and what are you going to do about it now is the main message of the book.
And a marriage is like an idea. It's like an idea you had, and we all have ideas, and at some point you look up and you say, you know, that idea is not in service to my life.
Yes, yes.
It's just not in service to it. And so you can either try to deconstruct it. I was just talking to my wife about this the other day about when you're heading down a path and you realize that path is not in service to you. It's not your job to annihilate that path, destroy that path, prove that path wrong. It's just your job to go onto another path and let that go. It's just another idea. Yeah. It's just a thought.
Yes.
Does that make sense?
That's a great analogy because people, I said that in the book too, and people would always say, oh, I'm so sorry your marriage failed. And I said, well, I don't view it as a failure. We had 14 years together and we talk all the time still, and we can still, like, we got out before it got to be hostile. And so what else can I say that I've had for 14 years? I mean, I haven't even, well, I guess being a writer, I've had that for 14 years. But, you know, most jobs I had for maybe 3 years. And so 14 years, that's a lot. I was 20-something when I met him. It would be a miracle if we were still completely aligned at 50, 60, 70. Like, when I see those relationships, great. But we just started to grow in different ways, and so it doesn't have to be this big, terrible thing that happened. It was just, okay, we're growing in different ways. How can we go forward from here? And that's if you can do it that way, then obviously it's better for your kids, and it's not this big pointing of fingers or this and that, and just cherish what you did have and then try to formulate it into something new. Even if you stayed married, there's things that have to change, you know, as you're saying, as you were discussing with your wife. Okay, so these things that we used to do 20 years ago aren't working for us anymore. How can we shape and evolve? And that was the women file for divorce about 8 times more than men. And the number one reason they say
really?
Is he just wasn't changing. Yeah, isn't that interesting? I would have totally thought it was the man. And the number one reason is
that doesn't surprise
changing.
Me.
That doesn't surprise you. And they said that the husband wasn't changing and evolving with her. And so it's not that he cheated or that he was abusive or all these things that we think it is. It's just she was changing and evolving, and maybe he was changing and evolving in a different way. So they were no longer compatible. So, it's a very interesting.
See it as a failure.
Yeah.
I don't believe in failure, period.
Yeah.
I mean,
good.
Either you learn from something or you don't. And so if two people are going different directions, then it would. The worst thing you can do is try to force yourselves to deny what the reality. And
absolutely.
Now I've never had to go through a divorce. My parents divorced, and so I saw that. But I haven't done it. But there's no value. There's no failure in recognizing the truth and acting from it.
Yes,
I'm sorry. Life is not about one series of accomplishments, and then you stack them on your grave, die happily. It just doesn't.
That's so true.
Work
that
way.
And it's the same with if you write a book and end up that the 11 drafts before your 12 weren't the right one. That's not that the 11 failed.
Right.
It was that the 11 got you to the 12. So that's a huge success. So it is. It's in the way you frame things. And I love what you said. As long as you learn and grow, and that is so much of the message of the book as well. Well, with almost all of my writing, it's like, okay, so things happen to me. And I was laughing at your introduction because, unfortunately, I always think if people just Google me, they think, wow, this woman's had a terrible life. And, but I view all these things as great learning experiences, and I wouldn't change any of them. And but you just... Right, because that we don't write about the day that we picked flowers and we skipped through a meadow. You know, we don't write about those days. We write about the days that something challenged us and we hopefully learned about it. So it looks like
a lot
of life is challenging. But I think that
that's
growth.
But even that, as a writer, especially of memoir, your job is to get beneath the event. There's the event, and then there's the emotional reality beneath it. And that is where the heat is. That's where the story is. And I've said it on the show before, but one of the worst things that can happen to a memoirist is to have something spectacular happen to them, like getting kidnapped by pirates or something, because now you have time just to write about the event, right? And not just get into the emotional reality.
Somebody wins the lottery. The memoir has to be about how terrible it was. Exactly. I thought it was this great thing, but then all these relatives came out of the woodwork, asked me for money.
Yes.
there's the real story.
Happened?
Exactly. There's no story, and I just won
because
the lottery.
We're changing emotional life, right?
That's great. That's great.
I mean,
Go ahead. Yeah. Well, and
no,
it's the learning of it, because also no one wants to read 300 pages of you just complaining about your terrible whatever, you know, so I think that that's it also, like, take the event and then what happened, and if there's not those pivotal points, it seemed, about 10 years ago when I got this wave of people who wanted to come see me, and they were all writing the horrible childhood story. Okay, well, we know that, and we know we've all had horrible childhoods. Even if we had this great childhood, we think there was something horrible about it. And I do love those stories. It's not that I'm against those stories, but if it was often it would just be 300 pages about the horrible childhood. And I thought, but what's the point? Where's the learning? Where's the growth? So this is a great first draft, and I say those first drafts are pretty much just ranting. It's the phone call you make to your girlfriend where you're just rah, 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 you're just complaining about things. That's the first draft. That's great. But don't try to publish that draft because no one wants to read that, you know, and then shape it. And often we can't also write about what we're living. So I'll start to write about things while I'm actually going through them, but they're not ready to be published yet either because we're in it. There's no perspective. There's no learning.
Yeah,
we don't know what's happening.
It?
We're just overwhelmed with it.
It's
so
hard.
It is hard. It's cathartic, but it's not necessarily our greatest writing. So it needs to get shaped and molded.
No, because what you're writing because it has to be in service to another person. You know, I always say when I teach memoir, I say the first thing you have to remember is this is your story, or this is a story about you, but it's not actually about you.
Yeah.
Your character in the story.
Yeah.
And you have to let you go in this way, don't you think?
Yes, that's great. And it's you're being of service. You are. And so this...
Yeah.
There's a point in all the writing where, for me, and I see it with my clients, where it shifts. We start off when we're writing it for ourselves, and then something shifts and we're writing it for other people. And that's when you know you're getting somewhere because it's no longer just a journal entry or a blog post or something that's for you. It's you're making this a universal, more universality, more common links that can be brought. And there's something along with that that becomes sort of fictionalized because you have to leave a lot out. If we really wrote from A to B, there'd be so much in there that no one cares about. So we do sort of have to change things and mold things and not make them up, obviously, but I laughed at sometimes my novels are more true than my memoirs because you have to pull a lot of that out. And like you said, you start off thinking, what's the theme? What am I trying to say? Well, there's going to be an arc, a story arc. Well, life doesn't follow a normal story arc. Life is really messy and ping-pongs this and way. But, you know, they don't need to hear every little nuance of that. They need to hear how I got from A to B. So we have to do some crafting there and some leaving out and some embellishing. And now we've got a nice story arc. So, but
that's right.
As I said, life doesn't always follow that path. So you have to change things.
No,
and
not at all. And the thing is that nobody cares about what happened to you, actually. I mean, not really. What they care about is what it felt like when stuff was happening to you. But I tell my students, like, nobody cares about your life, but they want to feel your life. They want to feel what you felt.
Yeah.
Really, nobody really cares. But we wonder what it felt like.
No, and so when we're just narrating events, and I caution to say, but there's a certain type of client that I have that will just narrate events and say, this is this memoir, and this is going to help so many people, and this, and I think, no, because you are not in this book. Where are you? This is your travel diaries, or, you know, or this is your work diaries, or this is your whatever diaries, but this is, you're not even in here, and sorry, but your life's not that interesting. Unless you're Obama, you can't really get away with that, because we don't care about it. We don't know you. We don't know, you know, we don't care that you went to Walmart and then you bought, you know, some bread and then you went on a trip. Like, you have to tell me what happened and bring me in so I can start relating to your story. So there's such common themes: grief, loss, hardship, all those things. It can be that you battle cancer, or that you got run over by a car, or that you lost your job. But with those, all those experiences, even if those things haven't happened to me, I can identify with some key emotions that you're starting to explain. So now I care about this story. But it's not just dictating what happened. That's not interesting to people.
Not at all. And in fact, a common someone we both know, I think she's a friend of yours. I interviewed her once and I really liked her, is Theo Pauline Nestor. And I loved my conversation with her, and I really liked Writing Is My Drink. And she talked about, and I think it's absolutely true, that the memoirist must be willing to show his or her frailty, her fear, her littleness, her anger, pettiness, you know, all the kind of stuff that you think is so unflattering is so critical to that story, so that when you do learn, actually, I don't even know if it's just for identification, but the story simply won't fly without it, I don't think.
That's true.
Your darkest self.
It's so vulnerable. Have to really allow yourself to be vulnerable. Otherwise, we're feeling that distance. So I'm using the analogy of talking to a friend. If you just are talking to a friend and she's bearing her soul to you and you just say, oh, everything's fine, she's not feeling the connection. So don't do that with your book.
Right.
Oh, everything's fine. We need to see deeper than that. We want to go in more and have more revealed. And it's very vulnerable to do that. And people say, well, how are you do that? And I say, well, I just tell myself every time when I'm writing that no one's going to read this. Because if I start thinking of my audience, I'll change it. So I've been telling myself that for 10 years, no one will read this as it's going to press. No one will. It's just a way to psych myself out so I can really still write what I need to write and not be like, you know, because you could start thinking about your kid's teacher, your ex-in-laws, you know, your teacher from 20 years. You know, if you start having all those people in your brain, you are not going to write the story you need to write. So you have to just forget about all of them and just write the story you need to write. And it will be so much better for that way.
You know, it's not funny. It just makes sense to me, Corbin, that you would have been told that. And I'm wondering if this is true of a lot of people who write memoirs, especially I think of Anne Lamott, of course, who's sort of now become like the godmother of the modern incarnation of the memoir in a lot of ways, especially the writer as memoirs. But that you've morphed into, and in fact, even Cheryl Strayed has that great column on The Rumpus that she writes, Dear Sugar. I write what amounts to a kind of advice column for my magazine every day, that because there is something about the memoirist that has to learn to become a teacher of sorts, don't we?
That's true.
More than the novelist might have.
That's true.
You know, because you're having to look at your life and learn from what you actually did and be able to articulate it. And how can you not end up teaching people in some way?
That's true.
Away from the page.
I think that maybe was the transformation that happened. Because with Creating a Life, a couple of the editors that we sent it to said, we'd be interested in this if you made it more of a how-to. Well, it's a how-to about quitting the 9-to-5 world, taking a leap of faith to become a writer, and then I end up having my child at home. I thought, this appeals to about 0.01% of the population. Like, I would not go running around telling people, have your baby at home and quit your job. Like, that's not good advice. It's what I did. It's what worked for me, but I wasn't going to write a book telling other people to do that. It's just my story on how I did that. So I was hesitant about that, but I think also I was younger and I was more naive and all sorts of things that as I went along, now more I do I'm not so afraid to instill my opinion about that and say this is what I did, and not necessarily that you have to do this, but if you are going to go through this path, here's my advice about it, whether that's writing or living your life or parenting or relationships. I'm freer to say that because you're right. How else, even if I'm not point blank saying this is what you should do, by writing my story, I'm sort of saying that because I'm giving an example of what I did. And it usually, even if it doesn't work out, it worked out. So that is the message there. And I think you're right, because otherwise if – oh, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, Theo said to me, and who said, you know, really memoir can be showing and telling. You're allowed, you know, okay. There are some memoirs that's all showing, but there are some like what she does. And kind of like what I did, what I found that when I had to finish this memoir, which I just, the one that I did the 12th draft on, and it had to do with my relationship with my son who's on this autism spectrum and how helping him helped me. But I realized I had to show not just the physical things we did, but I had to teach in a way how to shift your perspective, because that's what I did. My perception shifted.
Yes.
But I had to kind of walk the reader through what that was like, and I hadn't done that until the 12th draft. And once I put that in, it worked. So I allowed myself to go into teacher mode, and I thought, well, I can't teach that. But I thought, but I've got to, or else the thing doesn't make sense.
Oh,
how
great.
Did I shift my perspective? What did I do with my mind? You know,
because otherwise it's just another story about, you know, living with a child who has a so I'm guessing that made yours distinct, and also it felt more worthwhile for you as well.
Well, yeah, and I knew
it
was a big shift
for
me, seeing the world one way as opposed to another. But I also know that it was very difficult for me to see the world differently. And so I wanted to walk through what I did to help myself do that.
That's great.
But I left that out until the 12th draft. And
okay, interesting. And do you remember how you came to that? What happened?
Yeah. You know, the 11th draft, I broke it into two halves. I said, I'm going to tell my story in the first half, and then I'm going to write a how-to in the second one.
Ah,
and so I wrote this
okay.
how-to in the second part, and I was like, this doesn't work. If I could just take everything I wrote in the how-to and put it back into the story, then it would work. And then it did.
Okay, so
that's
you wove them together. That's great. That's great.
Yeah, I just blended them together, made it a story. Yeah.
All
right. So, Corbin, we've got just a couple minutes left. And, wow, this went fast. But so what I'd like you to do is answer one last question for me.
Okay.
You ready? What you have to do is finish a sentence for me. And the sentence is, if writing has taught me anything, it has taught me what?
Humility. That just popped into my head.
Yeah. Now, you've got to be humble, don't you?
Yes, you do. Because if you have all the answers.
How did it really teach you that?
Well, I think it's going from back and forth. So women tend to opt into self-deprecating humor a lot. You know, Anne Lamott, so many female writers do that. I think we all kind of start off that way. Because we, especially, I'm not saying men don't feel this way either. No one likes a braggart. So we don't, if we just write this story and here's how it's done, it's so easy. To me, that's not really appealing. So there's always this fine line of being humble enough and vulnerable enough to really share the story with also then some lessons learned, but in a way that isn't off-putting. Because if you act like you know everything, that's not a memoir. So people don't want to read that. So I think it's having that balance. That's just purely with the writing. Otherwise, also, people say all the time, oh, you're so lucky to be a writer. I said, you can be a writer too if you want to live on, you know, like very little amount of money and get told over and over again no. I mean, this is the life of a writer. And we're constantly being rejected.
That's right.
So for the one yay we get, we've gotten hundreds and hundreds of no's. And so let's not romanticize this life. Like, I wouldn't do anything else and I love it. But you have to, there's some humility there. It's just, okay, wasn't right for them, wasn't right, that's okay. And if you cower and crumble every time you get a no, you're going to make it one day. So you just have to keep going and say, all right, I guess I do need to keep working on this. So
Corbin, I think that is good advice. I've only got 30 seconds left. Thank you so much. Good
thank
luck.
Thank you. Thank you. This was fun.
Losing him and gaining you. And I hope I get to talk to you again sometime.
Me too. Great talking to you, Bill. Thank you.
All right. You're welcome. I'm sorry, Raider Nation 677. I can't get to your call, but next week I'll be here. Mary Crunk Farrell. Till that time, well, do what you love, write what you love, and be humble.